Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. We're so excited to be joining you. We're here to talk about your dogs, your cats, and maybe even some small critters. Anything you've got a question?
We've got answers for all of it.
The Marty and Laura Show is brought to you by Veterinary Village. With locations throughout Wisconsin, Veterinary Village is dedicated to enhancing the quality of animal and human lives today and into the future.
All right, you guys, welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. We are so excited to see you. For those of you on the YouTube channel, you should definitely check out Marty's pool. She's brought us poolside for today. So I'm a little bit jealous. It's hot here in Oregon. I could use my own pool. Just chill out. I'm saying, way to be, Marty. We all want to be you.
How do we know that's not just a Zoom backdrop or an e-cam backdrop?
I know it's not. I've talked to you while you're swimming in that pool. I'm just saying okay. It's definitely not okay. A Zoom background.
Okay. Busted.
But I think that's actually kind of a good segue to our conversation today. We thought that we would talk about fat dogs. We've done skinny cats, and it might be time to talk about fat dogs. And so our chubby furry friends, and we've already had an episode that we talked about how to keep a dog healthy for a long time, which is to not have them be overweight. But we haven't really done a deep dive on how do you fix that. So I thought we could start with some of our anthropomorphization of our pets. And if I wanted to do a psychological deep dive into I am on a diet, so I'm overfeeding my pet to compensate, like I feel like that's a thing.
I think it does happen. So you're hungry, so you put more food in the bowl.
Right? Yeah. Talk to us, Marty. Talk to us a little bit about research from Purina has indicated statistically and numerically that keeping your pet at a healthy weight keeps them alive for 2 years longer.
Yes. And Purina did do the study. I've actually now met the veterinarian a few years ago. His name is Dennis Lowler. Mm-hmm. It was an 11-year study that Purina did, and it will never be replicated by any other pet food company because an 11-year study is lots and lots of money. Yeah. But essentially what they did is they took littermate matched pairs, so brother-brother or sister-sister. They housed them at a facility, and they let one of the pairs, the brother or the sister, mm-hmm. eat all the Purina dog chow that their little heart desired and their little stomach could handle. And the littermate matched pair, the brother or the sister, was then kept lean at a 75% intake. So if that dog ate 4 cups a day, the littermate matched pair was fed 3 cups a day. Mm. So that kept them intentionally 25% leaner than the littermate. And what they found was two things. One was that they had less arthritis if they were lean, which of course makes perfect sense because they're carrying less weight. So there's less wear and tear on the joints. And
welcome
secondly,
to my
they
world,
lived,
sister.
Yeah. And they lived 2 years longer. And 2 years, that's, you know, like people try to correlate 1 to 7 for us. But if you could live 14 years longer, would you eat less? Would you be more careful with your diet? Would you do those things? And you're right. We anthropomorphize our pets. And so they may not really care that you're feeding them a little bit less if you do it strategically, if you do it correctly, if you do it carefully.
Strategically, I think that's a good, if you don't say, I'm so sorry, I'm only feeding you 4 kibbles. And the dogs pick up on our emotions.
Our cues.
And, right. Yes. And we've talked about this before with separation anxiety, with a whole bunch of other things.
So that's a long time for a dog to live. I don't know anyone that comes into my office when the dog is 14 and they say, oh yeah, you know, 2 years ago I was okay with this dog dying. Right. No. That is not what we hear from owners, cat owners.
I think, Marty, the thing that is, I don't know, culturally or societally notable about this is that other dog food brands have taken that research and are using it to advertise their own food. Which, yes, I think is kind of crappy, but...
Well, right. And if you watch the end of the Purina commercials, when they advertise that they have a dog food for leaner dogs, like their low-calorie versions, they say Purina dog chow fed correctly will help your dog live longer. And they earned every right to say that because they did the 11-year study with Dennis Lawler at the helm. And so I think that's really important that people can identify that that's an important thing. So just feeding your dog less food may not be a solution, because then they may not end up with, even though they have the right caloric intake, they may end up with nutritional deficiencies because the caloric intake is balanced with the minerals, the vitamins, all the stuff, the protein, the fat, all those things that make it a balanced diet. And so that's where it gets to be a little tricky, is how little food can you really only feed four kibbles to your dog and not have them nutritionally deprived, not just calorically, but nutritionally as well. And so that's really important. That's why the low calorie dog foods that are higher in fiber, lower in fat, but still have the nutrient components that your dog needs, those are really important factors. So if you are struggling with your dog's weight, then going to a low-calorie version can be very helpful. The pet food companies like Purina, like Royal Canin, like Hill's, they do have metabolic diets. It's called Satiety in Royal Canin. It's called, for Hill's, it's WD and RD. And for Purina, it's a calorically limited food. And they also then put in things like L-carnitine to help burn calories better. And there's definitely things besides just increasing the fiber and decreasing the fat that they do to improve the quality of these dogs' diets. So I think it's important that a lot of people identify that it's not just feed less, it's feed the correct diet based on your dog's metabolic needs.
So there's lots and lots. We always talk here on the Marty and Laura Show, on Pure Dog Talk, we talk about myth busting, right? Like myth busting is part of our joy in our lives. And so, you know, there's always the replace half their kibble with green beans. You know, that's going to do it. It's going to give them filler. How do you feel about that? I've done this process. What's your answer to that particular old wives' tale?
Well, it is a good way to decrease the caloric intake, because you're basically putting, I mean, typical dog food is around 300 to 400 calories a cup. If you look at the low-calorie versions, they may be 250 kilocalories a cup. So you have to really identify what that means. And a cup of green beans is about 30 calories. So you can do lots of things with fruits and vegetables other than grapes, raisins, potatoes, and corn to increase the filler, the fiber in your dog's diet without causing too many problems. But there is a lower limit to how much food your dog really should safely eat before they're simply not getting the nutrients that they need. So this is where you want to go in and talk to your veterinary professional and bring this up, because a lot of veterinary professionals, veterinary technicians, veterinary assistants, and veterinarians are uncomfortable saying to you, your pet is overweight and we need to help you do something about that. I just saw a corgi yesterday who came to me the first time a year ago. She knows I have corgis. She came to me a year ago. She lives an hour away from us, but she came in because she had just taken in a rescue dog and the dog was obese, like profoundly obese, like on a score of 0 to 9, you know, 9 being that the heaviest, she was a 9. So she has now gotten 12 pounds off of her little corgi and has done incredibly well. She's still not where she should be. She still needs to lose another 12 pounds. But number one, the client
identified. She still has 12 pounds to lose?
Yeah,
corgis,
she's still 42
pounds. Corgis don't even weigh 25 pounds. Come on now.
No, seriously, she weighed 56 pounds when she walked in my door, and a corgi should weigh around 28. Yeah. So she knew as soon as she adopted this dog that she was in trouble, and she did seek veterinary care. And I really applaud her for that, because a lot of people are insulted. I had another corgi person that came in, and I know I insulted him, not intentionally, not meaning to do any harm, but his dog weighed over 60 pounds. And I said to him, okay, seriously, I've had corgis for all these years. You can't have a 60-pound corgi and think that it's healthy. And so the dog would sit on the couch between the kids and eat the pizza and all the stuff. And I had a very serious heart-to-heart talk with him. And I don't think he's ever come back.
No.
And I feel bad about that, because I wasn't trying to insult the gentleman. I was trying to save his dog's life. And I think it's really important that if your pet needs something calorically different than what you're feeding, whether it's too little or too much, that you identify that and speak frankly with your veterinary professional, because they don't want to hurt your feelings. And it's especially difficult if the client has a bit of a weight issue as well. It can be a really difficult topic to broach, but it needs to be done. Now, Ian Dunbar, who's the behaviorist, he's out in California. He's been a veterinarian for over 40 years. He used to have this great line, and he would squat down next to the dogs in the exam room and he would whisper in their ear, "I'm so sorry, but this is the last time I'm going to be able to see you." And the client would look at him and say, are you retiring? Are you leaving practice? And he'd say, no, no. It's just that your dog isn't going to live very much longer. And I just wanted to tell him goodbye before. And I'm like, oh, my God, that is
oh
like
my God.
Powerful. But I can't pull that off. I am not Ian Dunbar.
No, I can't see that. So, I mean, this is one of the stories that I tell. I'm not sure that I've told it here, but I've told it other times. Back when I was working grooming, professional pet grooming in Nebraska, we had a client that would bring in her Bernese Mountain Dog. And I mean, you know, a Bernese Mountain Dog is a 100, 105 pound dog, you know, a good big one. Yeah. This dog was well over 200 pounds. It couldn't stand up. It couldn't walk. It was grotesquely obese. It had significant kidney problems and all the rest of the problems. It at one point towards the end would come catheterized, like permanently catheterized because it couldn't urinate. And the woman would send food with the dog because it had to be able to eat at all times.
Yeah.
And would
so there's a little
no
bit of a hint.
Conversation about the dog was overweight, like literally would not hear it. And I don't know how to talk to those people, Marty. I just don't know what to say.
And it is difficult. And so I usually start the conversation with, I really am doing this in the best interest of you and your pet. And it's not meant to be rude or insulting or in any way demeaning to you, but you have to identify that your pet has a significant health problem and it's related to the weight. And we do see more cancer and more diabetes and more arthritis and all the things that happen in people who are overweight. And I want to spare you from that. I had a client years ago that he was overweight. His parents were overweight. The cats were overweight. He had two cats. And I said, you know, you're putting your cat on the trajectory to become diabetic. And he said, yeah, well, I'm diabetic. My parents are diabetic. Well, just everybody get an insulin injection. I'm like, no, no, that is not the way that this should play out. We should not just accept the fact that that's what's happening. So I think you need to be open to the conversation that your veterinary professionals want to have with you and identify that there are foods that can be helpful. There are feeding techniques that can be helpful. There's a lot of things that you can do. And really, there's only two ways to lose weight. I don't care what you think you've seen on TV commercials. There's two ways to lose weight. One is to eat less and the other is to move more. And, you know, eating less may be eating fewer calories because you're feeding a lower density calorie diet. So they're still feeling full, but they're not, because if you've just cut back their food by half, they're going to start counter surfing and raiding the garbage and doing all kinds of things that you don't really, you know, eating poop and things that you don't want them to do. So those are undesirable, but moving more is also really important. Today, I had a client in that came in for our longevity study, and she walks 45 minutes every evening and 20 minutes every morning with the dog, and she's slender and the dog is at a great body weight. And so those kinds of things are really helpful. So moving more and eating less are the only two things. And Ozempic, all it does is make your stomach think it's full, and so you eat less. It doesn't magically make pounds fall off of you. Right. It makes your stomach have gastroparesis, which makes your stomach think that it's full. And maybe it is because it can't move the food through it. And so those are the ways that these drugs work. And they're not great alternatives. They're simply not. So, you know, it's really important that you identify, how do you make your pet move more, help your pet move more? Is that because you're moving more? Is it because you sit at the top of the stairs and you roll a ball down the stairs and they run up and down the stairs so you don't have to do too much exertion, but your pet still gets some exercise? Or is it the low calorie food? Is it changing how you feed? Is it the table scraps that you're feeding? Because invariably, I have people come in and say, oh, it's my spouse, my partner, right, the other person
kids,
in the family.
Whatever.
Oh, yeah. They always want to blame someone else. I'm like, well, whose chair does the dog sit under during dinner? Oh, well, it's always my husband's or whatever. You know, okay, fine. Then we have to change the behavior of your husband. So the treats, I don't buy any dog treats. I'm sure the pet food companies don't want to hear this. My dogs don't get treats. They get carrots. They get apple slices. They get melon. They
ice
get all
cubes.
Kinds of fruits and vegetables.
I
ice cubes, water bones.
Backflips for ice cubes. I mean, literally turn backflips for ice cubes.
Yeah, we can call those water bones and just tell the dog it's something to snack on.
She can you tell can take the difference between the water ding-a-ling on the refrigerator and the ice ding-a-ling on the refrigerator.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they cue into all kinds of things. You can take a metal muffin tin and take your dog's kibble and put it in there with water, with chicken broth, low-sodium chicken broth, or yogurt, and put it in the freezer. Freeze it. So have two muffin tins, one in the freezer, one in the dishwasher. And then you pull that out. And instead of your dog gobbling during their food in 29 seconds for breakfast and for dinner, you've now given them a tray. You don't want to increase the number of calories. So you're not increasing the amount of food. You're just slowing them down because the food is in a frozen cube. So maybe it's not 6 or 12 muffin hold full. You have to figure out what your pet is currently eating. And if you can cut back 10 or 20%, they're going to lose weight. And that's not cutting 50%. You know, you don't have to starve them. But if you can cut back 10 or 20% on their food intake, you're going to get weight off of that pet without even doing any additional exercising. So simple things can be done that are easy to do. They're not expensive. You don't have to buy a feeding puzzle. You don't have to do all the stuff. You can buy a muffin tin at the dollar store for $1.25, and you get some low-fat yogurt and put their food in it and pop it in your freezer, and then you've got something for them to spend most of their morning and most of their evening doing, is waiting for that little cube of yogurt with their kibble frozen into it to thaw out enough that they can nibble on it instead of slurping it down in the 29 seconds that most Labradors eat in.
Or Chihuahuas or Spinoni. My only concession to Agatha is that she gets one bite of my banana every morning.
And bananas are fine.
And ice cubes.
Doggett simplifies the puppy buying journey by connecting families with the perfect breed and responsible, health-verified breeders. They are the only breeder marketplace that verifies health clearances and responsible breeding practices. Through their personalized puppy matcher tool and matchmaker services, they educate and guide buyers every step of the way, ensuring a seamless process and a perfect match for their lifestyle. From initial breed consultation to introductions with top breeders, Doggett makes responsible puppy ownership easy and stress-free.
So this is a slightly different topic, and we hadn't talked about this ahead, but I think it's a worthwhile conversation. There are dogs, oddly enough, that won't eat. It seems weird. Who won't gain weight. Who are, for whatever purpose that these folks have, need to gain some weight. Do we have some flip side tricks? You know, whether it's just a dog that needs to gain weight because of a medical reason, or somebody's show dog, they want to be whatever, you know, whatever it is. There are dogs, for a fact, who should eat more than they do.
And there are.
I have processes that I go through. What's your suggestion on that one?
Well, the first thing is to make sure they actually need to eat more, because I do have clients that come in and say, my dog doesn't eat very well. And I'll look at their weight and I'll look at their body condition and I'll say, no, just because they didn't finish their meal doesn't mean that they're not eating enough calories. So the first thing you need to do is identify, is that pet underweight? So their rib cage, regardless of the breed, should feel like the back of your hand. If it feels like your knuckles, yes, indeed, they are truly underweight, unless they're maybe a sighthound. And if it feels like the heel of your hand or worse, they're chubby. So this is really easy for you to tell, is your dog's ribs should feel like the back of your hand, not like your knuckles. So are they truly underweight, or are they just not eating what you expect or what the bag says? Because if it says they're supposed to eat 2 cups a day and they eat a cup and a half, but they're at an ideal body condition, you don't need to do anything. My tricks, well, I use Kraft macaroni and cheese if I'm trying to get the dog to put on weight fast. It works for me. Macaroni and cheese always puts weight on me. That works. There are
instant
high-calorie
mashed potatoes.
Yeah, exactly. There are high-calorie dog foods that are on the market. And all you have to do is sit at home on your computer and look up the different kinds of foods that are out there. And if you go into the ingredient list and the information on the website or on the back of the bag, it's harder to do at the store on the back of the bag because the print is small. But if you do it at your computer, you can go to the store or go to the online department that's selling the pet food and know what you're getting. And so, like I said, average pet food is around 300 kilocalories a cup. Some are 350. You can find them at 400 and 450. And those are going to be the performance diets, like the Sport 3020, like the sled dog diets, like some of those that are meant to be a really calorie dense diet. Some of those are great. If you have a dog that's a fussy eater, I like Bill Jack Picky No More. There's definitely things that you can feed that will improve your dog's attitude about their food and their appetite. And if your dog isn't eating their food well, the first thing I talk to a client about is maybe your pet has a food intolerance. It's not an allergy. They're not technically sick, but they eat it and they don't feel good. So they eat just enough to stay alive. So it may be the protein, it may be the carbohydrate, but they may have a chicken sensitivity or a beef sensitivity or a particular carbohydrate sensitivity. And so I usually tell people to go to the store, get a couple of samples, lay them out for the dog, like give them four different bowls and let them pick the one that they want to eat, because they're going to tell you what makes them feel good. And if they're not feeling good after they're done eating, they're going to eat enough to stay alive and they're not going to eat well. And as soon as you figure out, oh, they can tolerate pork, but they can't tolerate chicken, they're like, thank God you finally figured out what you should feed me. I've been starving for 3 years. So why didn't you feed me pork and applesauce before today?
Okay, so this is a really good discussion of the different ways we think about things. Like, that's a really good solution. And I'm over here as, you know, a retired dog handler, someone who worked with a lot of people's pets, like a variety of them over the course of a lot of time, who needed to be in a specific condition, right? And they would tell me, oh, he doesn't eat. Yes, he does. No, he won't eat. He'll starve himself to death. Yes, he does. And I would see these clients just constantly changing the dog's dog food. Their diet changed once a week. The dog was just constantly with an upset stomach. Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, pick a quality dog food. Put the dog in a dog crate. Give the dog the food bowl. Give him 5 minutes to eat his food. Take the food away. Mm-hmm. The next morning, give him the same bowl back in his dog crate. And once he finishes that bowl, then he can get a new bowl of food. This doesn't work, obviously, if you've put a bunch of toppers or a bunch of this or a bunch of that. Right. So there is a psychological piece of this that I believe is a factor. Thought process.
Right.
Because I've cured, I can't even count high enough to tell you how many picky dogs I've cured with that system. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I don't think that's a bad idea, but I do think you need to give the dog the benefit of the doubt to say maybe they do have something going on. So first, you want to do that. The other thing is it takes at least 14 days for the dog's GI tract to adjust with the bacteria, the biome in the GI tract, to adjust to a food change. So if you're changing it every couple of days or every week, your dog never has time to adjust.
On top, blah,
exactly.
Blah, blah, blah.
So they're always going to have a GI upset and they're not going to feel good and they're not going to want to eat well. So I think it's important that you identify some of those things, but, you know, really work with your veterinary professional on this. And if you think your dog has a food sensitivity, there are some really good diets out there that are limited in the antigens or their hydrolyzed proteins, and you can figure out what it needs to be. It may be a homemade diet. And I'm generally not a big fan of homemade diets because they tend to either be over or under on the nutrients that they should have in them. It may be too much. It may not be enough. And there's a website called Balance It that does a pretty nice job at no charge, but you can actually pay for a nutritionist to help you develop a diet that's specific to your dog's needs. So you can go to balanceit.com. Take a look at it, figure out a homemade diet. You're not going to screw up a dog's nutritional balance in 2 weeks. So if it takes 2 weeks to figure out what you got going on, that's not so bad. But after that, your dog will need some additional nutrients. It may be a vitamin mineral supplement. It may be something else. There's a book that Donald Strombeck wrote back in the 80s, and it's got a new edition. I think it's Patricia Schenck, called Homemade Dog and Cat Diets. So if you have to do a homemade diet, there are definitely sources out there, but the trick to it is to follow the exact recipe. It's not like cooking for your family. If it says you have to put this in it, then that's what you have to put in it. It's called recipe drift. If you go to the store one day and they don't have chicken necks, so you buy turkey necks. And then the next time you go to the store and they don't have this kind of rice, but they have that kind of rice. And pretty soon you're going to be off topic. You're going to be way off the diet that was nutritionally balanced. Mm. So do work with a nutritionist or your veterinarian if they have nutritional training to figure it out. There are veterinary nutritionists. It's an actual specialty. There's really good people out there that can help you, but you just have to find those resources if it turns out that you need a homemade diet. In general, I'm not a big fan of homemade diets, like I said, because they tend to have recipe drift. They tend to have nutrient imbalances. If they're raw, they tend to have bacteria and parasites. So there's a lot of
concerns.
I was
just going to go to raw because I know that isn't like one of your big, big favorite things.
Yeah, and I've been accused of being one of those people that's bought into the pet food large scale companies, but really, you know, our dogs do very, very well. Pets live to be 15, 18, 20 years old now. They didn't when they were living on the farm and eating what was scraped off the plate into the bowl. So we have to come to terms with the fact that our pet food companies, the three big ones, Purina, Royal Canin, and Hill's, have done a tremendous job of developing nutrient profiles, not ingredient lists, nutrient profiles that will help our pets through some of their really significant medical problems. It's actually pretty cool that you can treat kidney disease or intestinal disease or joint disease with nutrition.
And spend an enormous amount of money on actual, real live, with animals research, not just guessing.
Exactly. They have colonies of dogs and cats that their full-time job for years is to eat the food. And after they're done eating the food, they're adopted into homes. They live in amazing facilities. I've been to the Purina facility. I've been to the Royal Canin. I've been to Waltham, which is in England. I've been to Dayton, Ohio, where Royal Canin is. I've been to all of them. I've been to France twice. Some of these are on my own money to go visit these facilities, and their facilities are fabulous. They have great nutritionists. They really know what they're doing, and they are able to craft diets that if you and I ate those diets, if we were smart enough to eat that well, we would be healthier too. I know I don't eat.
I have often believed that if I could just have someone who fed me the way I feed my dogs, I would not be 50 pounds overweight.
Yeah, I know. It's curating your food, and home chef is not the way to do it. So there's definitely things that we can do for our pets that we can't do for ourselves. And then people say, well, why are there prescription diets? Why do I need a prescription from my vet? Because if your pet has a heart problem and you're feeding an intestinal diet, or if your cat has a thyroid problem and you're feeding a diet for diabetics, it's the wrong diet. So it's really important that your veterinary professional is prescribing and the right food is being sent to you, or you're picking up the right food. Right. And it is absolutely amazing. We can treat hyperthyroidism in cats with an iodine depleted diet, and it does a fabulous job without having to stuff a pill down your cat twice a day. There are absolutely amazing intestinal diets and kidney diets. I mean, the kidney diet stuff, they did a study at Minnesota, the epicenter of all things kidney and bladder, years ago, that they had naturally occurring dogs with kidney failure, and they had them broken into two categories. One was a category of dogs that ate the prescription food that Hill's made. The other was a category of dogs that they brought in all the pet food, they put it in a tumbler, they distribute it out in the bag. So it was just a mixture of all these over-the-counter pet foods. And at the end of the first year, they ended the study. It was supposed to be a two-year study. They ended the study at the end of the first year because so many more dogs were alive in the KD group, the kidney diet group, than were alive in the over-the-counter food group that they considered to be unethical and immoral to continue the study. They literally bailed on the study because they said, we're letting dogs die that don't need to die because we're not feeding the right food. So these diets are absolutely proven with nutritional. I mean, we did one of the YD studies for thyroid disease in cats. We did it at our practice. I can tell you how these cats respond. And it is amazing how well these pets do on these particular diets. So if you're having a struggle, whether it's weight, whether it's intestine, if it's chronic diarrhea, if it's whatever.
Allergies.
Allergies. Allergies are a big one. Talk to your veterinary professional. Trust them. And if they say, we have to feed this food for 12 weeks, this is all they get. No food off the counter, no table scraps, no treats, nothing else for 12 weeks. Do what they ask and see what 12 weeks looks like, because you will be stunned in most cases at how much better the pets are feeling, looking, acting. It is amazing how much nutrition plays a role. And we kind of overlook that because, you know, I want an Oreo cookie or I want a bowl of ice cream.
Well, like I said, if I had somebody as stern as I am about what I consumed for my pets,
I know, we'd be much better off.
We would be much better off.
So I don't buy treats. I don't buy snacks. None of that stuff. Cheerios make a great training treat. There are 3 Cheerios to 1 calorie. I actually made a staff member count the number of Cheerios in a cup. There are 3 Cheerios to 1 calorie. Carrots, apple slices, bananas. Most pets don't like citrus,
ice
but
cubes.
If they do, great. Ice cubes are great. Broccoli, lettuce. The stem off of the asparagus, it's a little too tough to chew up, but the pet likes it. I make my own bone broth with the bones and with the carrots and the celery. And you can do some amazing things if you just plan it right. So please just take some time to figure out with your veterinary professional what your pet could benefit from.
Excellent. We are here. We want your dogs to be healthy and happy.
And live long.
And live long.
And prosper.
And prosper. Can I make my fingers do that? Yeah, there it is.
Live long and prosper.
That's it.
How do dogs prosper? Exactly. Oh, by living long. That's right. And eating carrots.
Carrots. Carrots are a great answer. Green beans are not a bad answer.
No, they're a great answer. I actually had a client that came in and he said, no, I'm not feeding my dog green beans. I don't eat vegetables. I'm not feeding them to my dog. My dogs won't eat vegetables. So I went over to the freezer, grabbed a handful of frozen green beans, threw them down in a bowl on the floor in front of his two dogs. He looks at them as they're gobbling down the green beans and goes, traitors.
Well, one way to get vegetables in my pets would be to just give them whatever Kim picks off of his plate.
Because
he won't eat vegetables. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, it's not what you like. And not every dog likes every kind of fruit or vegetable. You have to figure out what they are. But it takes a little experimentation. So any fruit or vegetable you and your kids are eating other than corn and potatoes because they're starchy and grapes and raisins because they're toxic to kidneys, any other fruit or vegetable is fair game in the right amount. You know, just be careful about how much you're giving.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you very much, Marty, as always.
Sure.
Our pets and our families are grateful for your insight.
Thank you.
We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the Marty and Laura Show. We're excited to bring you these unique, fun, fact-based conversations about pet health. From pro tips on selecting your new dog to what your cat's cough means and what you should do about it. We'll meet you wherever you are, in the car, on the treadmill, walking the dog. And we'll bring you a good laugh, a great story, and a bright idea every week. We hope you'll join us on social. Stop by the website to sign up for an extra tip of the week for your pet. While you're at it, do us a favor, please, and leave a review wherever you find your podcasts. The Marty and Laura Show is produced by Pure Dog Talk, Inc. Sound design and editing by Premium Audio Services.